Hey, I'm Sarah. When planning our home birth, my husband Matthew and I were really frustrated by the lack of empowering and honest home birth resources. So we created this podcast to start a new conversation for moms and families like us. This is Doing It at Home. Hey everyone, welcome to the Doing It at Home podcast. Today's episode, we chat with Olivia and Will from Australia. So we got to talk to another dad, which we love to do. We welcome papas on the show to share their part of the experience. But Olivia and Will have a really cool story in that they planned for home birth and at 37 weeks had to shift things up a little bit when they were told they could no longer have a home birth due to amniotic fluid levels dropping. So they have a really great example of what to do when things shift up on us like that in life and in our birth planning, because we know that can happen. You know, the best laid plans sometimes need contingency plans and contingency plans for those contingency plans. And Olivia is a neonatal nurse in a NICU, and so she brings a really great perspective as well just on what she wanted to experience in her birth. And, you know, when they found out they couldn't do the home birth anymore, it was a process of just being at peace and accepting and preparing themselves to still have an amazing birth for their little daughter Audrey, who is just the cutest thing ever. So it's a really great story. We got along really well with them. We enjoyed hanging out with them, and we will definitely be visiting them whenever we do our world tour and drop down in Australia. So here's their birth story. Hello, Olivia and Will. Welcome to the show.
Hi there, Matthew.
Howdy.
Hey, guys. Thank you so much for joining Sarah and I on the Doing It at Home podcast. We are really, really excited to talk to you guys. This is fun for us because we're on opposite ends of the earth.
Yes, you're in the future. You're ahead of us in time.
Monday morning here.
Yeah, and it's Sunday evening here. And this is also cool because we're joined by Will. So Will, you're the, as Sarah was saying before we hit record, you're the second dad to be on this podcast, on this show. So thank you so much for having the courage to come on.
Great to be here.
Great. So, Olivia and Will, just take a second to tell us a little bit about you guys, you know, where you live, your family, what you all are up to, and just so listeners can learn a little bit more about you.
Well, I'm Olivia. I'm 28, and Will and I have been together for 7 years, and we've got a little 7-week-old baby called Audrey. And we live in Adelaide in South Australia, so quite a long way away from you guys. Mm. I'm a neonatal nurse. I'm a registered nurse, and I work in a special care nursery that's attached to an intensive care nursery. So I both work in both areas, but I don't look after the tiny little sick babies on ventilators. And then Will...
Yeah, I'm... How old am I? 34? Yeah. Like that. I'm a bicycle mechanic. I work for the Australian National Cycling Team, so a fair bit of travelling involved with that. I was in Flagstaff, Arizona, when I found out we were having a baby.
Wow.
So, and I lived in Boulder, Colorado for a couple of years as well, so sort of a bit familiar with the American way of style of doing things.
Nice.
But yeah, so like I said, Liv and I have been together for 7 years. We've been living in the house that we bought for over a year now, and Audrey's the next step along the way.
Yes, she is. That's beautiful. So tell me a little bit about when you did find out you were pregnant and you were stateside. Did you guys know you wanted to go home birth route, or was that a decision you came to along the way? How did that pop into the scene?
Well, we were talking about that, and I can't really remember when we decided, but before we started trying for a baby, I started listening to podcasts. I listened to The Birth Hour. That was before you guys came along. And I listened every day to a podcast. But I think I worked with a midwife one day who was pro-home birth, and she told me about the business of being born. So Will and I had watched that. And Will's brother was actually born at home. So he's the eldest of three, and his mum had a terrible delivery at a hospital, so for her second baby, had a baby at home. So it wasn't that foreign to Will, the concept of it. But I remember my 12-week appointment, Will was away, so I went on my own, but I requested a home birth that early on. So I don't know when we officially decided, but we'd been talking about it for a while. And I think with all of the stuff that I see at work, I didn't want to be a part of that. I didn't want to have all of the interventions that can happen in a hospital. I wanted to be at home. It felt really normal, and it felt like the right thing to do for us from the very beginning, I think. Yeah.
That's amazing. Can you go into a little bit more of what you see at work or what you had seen at work that had moved you more towards home birth? You know, you mentioned some interventions, but what, some more about that?
I think that at the very beginning of the pregnancy, I was so scared. I think a lot of my pregnancy was filled with lots of anxiety about the pregnancy, not at all the birth, but because I see the sick babies, I see the tiny babies, and I was so worried about having a premature baby. And I just look up some stats. Only 0.8% of babies are born less than 32 weeks. So it's such a tiny percentage, but it's all that I see, and it's just so normal for me.
Yeah.
And it's hard to forget that, you know, most of the babies, or hard to remember that most of the babies are at home with their mum and are perfectly healthy. But I have a few cousins and friends who have had babies in hospitals and went to cesarean section, and then they had their second babies and they were booked cesarean sections, and I didn't want to do that. But actually we had signed up with a midwife who, so all of the midwives that you go through here, we didn't use a private midwife. It's through the hospital, and we were going to deliver at a hospital about half an hour away from us. So we went and looked at the birth centre there and looked at the rooms, and it was really nice. But we went home thinking, our house is way nicer. Mm. Our home is like our bedroom and our lounge room, and so much nicer than delivering in a really nice hospital room. Yes, but we wanted to be at home. And yeah, at work I go to emergency cesareans when things have gone wrong, failure to progress, all sorts of things that I see, everything that goes wrong, really. And I thought that things could be more safe at home, but at the same time, there was a few times that I felt hesitant about it because I saw all the really scary things. And I work with so many women who, their view is so skewed about birth because of what they see. And it was really hard for me to ignore all of the negative stories and the negative images about birth that I was seeing every day. And I tried to not listen to all those stories. And everybody wants to share their birth story, and most of them aren't very nice.
Mm.
Which is why I loved listening to the podcast, and I made sure I listened to positive birth stories every day.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Calendar. Let's be real. Running a household can be exhausting and chaotic. And finding the perfect Mother's Day gift, it's not exactly a no-brainer. Until now. The Skylight Calendar is the best way to organize the family and give everyone, especially mom, some peace of mind to enjoy the things that matter most. The Skylight Calendar is a smart, touchscreen calendar that keeps track of and manages the chores, dinner planning, groceries, and to-dos for the whole family. The Skylight Calendar automatically syncs each family member's digital calendars and displays them all together on one color-coded touchscreen. It even doubles as a digital picture frame, so you can finally share all those special moments that are just sitting on your phone. As a limited-time offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight calendar when you go to skylightcal.com/easy. That's skylightcal.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightcal.com/easy.
Yeah, that's something that we encountered as well as we were, you know, going through the pregnancy. It's, you know, people have great intentions when they share things with you, but they're not always positive and they're not always encouraging.
No.
And
most of them are.
Yeah, and you just kind of have to learn to deflect those. And so, Will, yeah. Will, I'm curious, what was your thoughts and opinions on home birth?
Well, again, as Liz was saying, because my brother was born at home, with zero complications or anything, it was just seemed like, well, of course it works. Like, why wouldn't you, sort of thing? Seeing Liz's family having kids and doing a bit of reading, and you sort of see the stats on how much more likely intervention is to occur if you are in the hospital environment. That sort of, it just, it made sense to me that like psychology of the mother is so important, that if you're in a comfortable environment, things are more likely to go smooth rather than all of a sudden thrown into a sort of a foreign, very sterile environment with strangers around. Like, it just made sense to me that, of course, that's going to make you sort of your subconscious sort of shut down a bit. So yeah, for me, like, home birth made sense.
You didn't take much convincing at all.
No, it was just, all right, well, we'll just have to, yeah, adapt things here a bit to make it work, and we're all good.
Mm.
I think the confidence as well, being the program we were in was run by the hospital.
Mm.
There was checkups and ticks you had to check off along the way to make sure you were, I guess, a very low risk category, all your risk factors were minimised, which in the end was what ruled us out. But knowing that process was there made me feel a lot better, because, well, the whole way along we sort of said, well, if it doesn't work out, the whole home birth route, it's been for a very good reason that it's put us into the hospital. I was never worried one way or the other about it, that's sure.
Mm. So it sounds like you guys had a plan for what you wanted, but you were also open to things shifting, and as long as you had a healthy birth, that's really what mattered.
Yeah, well, of course we didn't want to be in the hospital, and I'd said to Will a few times through the pregnancy, what if we can't have a home birth? And he kept saying, it'll be a really good reason why we can't have a home birth. And he was right. But the thing about, so there are a few private midwives where we live, not very many, and they're quite expensive. So, and I don't know very many people who have used them. So if you go through a hospital, it's called a midwifery group practice. So you get a midwife who does all of your visits at home. Oh, that's Audrey.
Hey, Audrey.
She does all of your visits at home. And she is, so she works for the hospital. She does deliveries in the hospital in a... and then they do they offer home births as well. Though I think last year there was 0.5% of home births in our state. So, and I guess the stats are pretty similar in America. There aren't very many home births at all. So if we would have had the baby at home, can you hear me? Little bit crying.
She's just saying hello.
Yeah. So if we'd been at home, the midwife, so you would have had two midwives. We had a primary midwife, and then you have a backup midwife, and they are in communication with the hospital all through the home birth.
Hmm.
So, if something were to go wrong and you had to transfer, they would have been on the phone to the hospital saying, we're on our way, this is what's happening. And even through the birth, they're talking to the hospital saying, this is what stage we're at. I don't think I would have liked to have had a private midwife, because I don't have any affiliations with the hospitals here. And you really are on your own. The only drawback with that is you have to fit into a whole heap of criteria to fit in to have a home birth. You have to be really low risk. You have to live within half an hour. We were ruled out because Audrey was really small, so she was IUGR, so she was growth restricted, and I had low fluid as well. So it wasn't until I was 37 weeks and 4 days that they told us we couldn't have a home birth.
Wow.
So we got all the way to the end. So that it was really disappointing. But we, you know, there was nothing we could do about it. I'd say that if we'd had a private midwife, we could have had a baby at home, but then there would have been complications because she was so small, and I wouldn't have wanted to have a baby, her at home anyway, knowing that.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, you know, a little disappointing. Can you talk a little bit more about that? You know, that is very close, 37 weeks and 4 days.
I know.
When you got the news, did you respond?
Well, at 32 weeks, I was measuring, like, my fundal height was low, and everywhere I went, people would comment on how little I looked, especially I work with, I see pregnant women all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the doctors were even saying it to me. And so 32 weeks, I was measuring low. I got to 36 weeks and I measured low again, and they said, let's do a scan just to make sure. And baby's weight had dropped off. And they said, let's just see what happens. We'll do another scan at 37 and 4. Previous to that, I had not seen a doctor except for my first initial GP visit. But otherwise, there were no doctors involved. It was just the midwife. So we had a scan and I'd seen a doctor and she said, look, I don't think home birth is a good idea. Mm. But I would have said, I guess she'd say that anyway.
Right.
And so we came back for the next scan and I was feeling really anxious about what they were going to say, and I was worried they were going to say we couldn't have a home birth. But I didn't want to be distraught about that, because you hear all these stories about mums not coping with their birth or their delivery because it's not going to plan, and they, like, years down the track, they're still trying to deal with their birth not going the way they had wanted it. And I didn't want that to happen to me. So we had the scan at the hospital, and the woman who did the scan told us that the baby was small and fluid was low, so, you know, it didn't look great. And we sat in the waiting room to see the doctor, and I cried because I knew what she was going to say. When we went in to see her, I was surprised at how I actually dealt with it, because I felt okay about it, and I don't even know why. I think because I prepared myself for what she was going to say, and, you know, there's nothing we were going to be able to do about it anyway. But we'd made it so far, and we had everything planned. We had the pool, and we had all our towels, and we had the tarp, and we had a home birth kit already at home, and the next day we were having oxygen cylinders delivered. We had to change all of that, but, you know, that's just how it went.
Yeah.
So it was, if we had another one, I would definitely want to have a home birth. But we had a beautiful birth anyway, so.
Yeah.
It's fine. I'm happy.
Wow. So let's talk about Audrey's birth then. So you knew you would no longer be birthing at home. I'm sure you and Will had a few conversations then and shifted the game plan, so to speak. At that point, how did you proceed with you would go to the hospital or that whatnot? Go ahead.
Well, at that scan, and when the doctor said we were no longer eligible for a home birth, she wanted to induce me at 40 weeks, and I straight out said I did not want to be induced, because the cascade of events after that, I just didn't want it.
Right.
And already, so from about 36 and a half weeks, I'd been doing everything that I could to try and bring on labour. I started expressing it because I knew she was small. So at about 36-ish weeks, I started expressing. So I'd been collecting colostrum because if we were at the hospital, I didn't want them to say that she needed formula or needed to go on a drip because she was so small. So when we got to hospital, I had 3 meals of colostrum already to give to her.
Wow.
That's amazing.
And I think lots of people don't know that you can do that, but because I work with so many midwives, and some of the women I work with are lactation consultants, they'd said, you know, start doing it. So I collected it all and gave that to her. So at that appointment with the doctor, I said, I didn't want to be induced. She said, what if we do a stretch and sweep this morning? And I said, yeah, let's do that, because hopefully that would, you know, start things going and I could avoid being induced at 40 weeks.
What is it called again?
She did that. It's called a stretch and sweep. I don't know. There might be another name. So it's not breaking the waters. They release the membranes away from the uterus. I'm not a midwife, so that's my understanding of it.
Oh, okay.
It's not a very comfortable thing. They just sort of sweep their fingers around in a circular motion and try and separate it a little bit, if that makes sense.
Yes, I'm familiar. They do
stripping
that.
The membranes?
Yeah, I think it's called something along the lines of stripping the membranes. But yes, that does not sound very lovely.
So she did that. She said my cervix was soft and short, and I was already 1 centimeter.
Mm.
So she said, it's very unlikely that you'll get to 40 weeks and have to be induced. So went home, and that night I thought I was going into labor. I thought, yep, we're having a baby tonight. And, you know, next thing, it was the morning and there was no baby.
Oh, wow.
But the next day I lost my mucus plug in the morning, and I drove around for the next few days with a plastic bag on my seat in the car just in case.
You're ready.
Ready. And then on the Friday night it happened again. I thought I was going into labor, but no baby in the morning. And then on the Sunday, so I'd had that stretch and sleep on the Wednesday, and on the Sunday we went out for a nice dinner, and that night, so 3 o'clock in the morning, so on Monday morning, that it was the real labor. I knew it was the real thing. And I had a TENS machine. And one of the podcasts you did, I saw that she used a TENS machine, and you had never heard about that before.
Yeah, yeah.
That is correct. We were like, what's
that?
Yeah. Yeah, a friend of mine told me to use one. And it was great. I had it, so I put it on at 3 o'clock in the morning. First thing I did, put that on, and that stayed on until we had to go to the hospital. So we laboured all day Monday morning, and all day Monday we were at home. We went for a walk and with the dogs, and we sat out the back with picnic rugs and right under the tree and read books. And aww. I'd called the midwife just to let her know things were happening, and she came to our house at about lunchtime and checked me, and she said, "You're only 1 centimetre." Because initially I had planned on not having any checks because I didn't want to be disappointed.
Mm.
And I was really disappointed because I'd been 1 centimetre last Wednesday, or the Wednesday before. And she said to me, "I don't think this is labour. I think that you should just ignore it, and because you'll be just exhausted if this goes on." And I was like, "Oh, I'm pretty sure it is labour." And so we just did our thing that day and watched a few movies and hung out. And then I called the midwife again, and she came back about 9 p.m. And she said, "You're still 1 centimetre. You really need to ignore this and just try and sleep tonight." And there was no way I was going to ignore it. So we laboured all Monday night at home. Didn't sleep at all. So I haven't slept since the 3 a.m.
Wow.
And in the morning, it was probably 5 o'clock, I said, "Well, we need to go to the hospital." So with the hospital, we were going to the birth centre. It's in the hospital. So where we live, there aren't any birth centres. They're all within the hospital. So if anything were to happen, we would just be transferred down the hallway to a hospital room. So we called the midwife and I said, "We're going to come in." She said, "Okay." So we got to the hospital about 7 in the morning, and she said, "I was 4 centimetres. And I think I was hoping to be 7 or something. Anyway, she said, "Yep, come in." So we got to our room at about 7:30, and it was a beautiful room with a really big window looking out onto this beautiful park, and there was a birth pool and there was a shower. So we spent the whole morning in the shower with Will, with the hot water on my back, and it was probably 11. And she said, "I think I want to check you because I think you're progressing quicker than you think." And I was 7 centimetres. And while she was checking me, she accidentally broke my waters.
Mm. Oh, wow.
Anyway, that didn't bother me too much. And so we kept going. She said, "What? We'll get in the pool now," because they'd said she didn't want me to get into the pool until I was 6 or 7, because your labour can regress or slow it down if you're in the pool too early. But this whole time in the birth centre, it was just Will and I. The midwife would come in every 15 to 20 minutes and with the Doppler and check baby's heartbeat. And apart from that, we didn't see her. It was just so beautiful to be two of us. And I know with you guys, you had a big birth team, but we wanted it to be just us. So if we were at home, it would have been just us and the midwife. And
that's nice.
I feel like we wanted to just be our little family and not have other people there to distract us or, I don't know, just I thought it was just such a special thing to do, the two of us. Anyway, so I'd got into the pool at about 11 o'clock and that was beautiful. The water was just amazing. Just that warm. I can't even explain why. It's just so buoyancy and the warmth. And,
that's what we hear. That's cool that you got to have water.
What's that?
Sorry, I was saying that's cool that you had you were able to have water because you said it, you know, when you were preparing for your home birth, you had a labor pool, a birth pool. So it's nice that you had that at the birthing center.
Yes, and I made sure when they said we had to go to the hospital, I said, "Can I still have a water birth?" And the doctor said, "Yes." So that's really what I was hoping for. But one positive we thought about when they said we couldn't have home birth, because we were worried about running out of hot water. At least at the hospital, I can have the shower on hot all day long.
Yes. Never run out. That's amazing. I have a question about the birthing center within the hospital. Is that just your choice at that point when you're making your birthing plans with the hospital? Or is there some sort of criteria to be able to be in the birthing center?
So if you go through this program called Midwifery Group Practice, you are in the birthing center.
Oh, okay, great.
So the hospital we went through took high-risk women in the birthing center. I didn't give birth in the hospital that I work in because we didn't live in the area, and they wouldn't, even though I worked down the corridor, they said, "No, sorry, you can't have a baby here because you live out of the catchment." But where I work, they don't take high risk in this group practice. So if you didn't want to do group practice, you would have just rocked up on the maternity ward and you would have had a midwife that you'd never met, and she would have finished her shift 8 hours later and you'd have another midwife.
Gotcha.
So the birthing centre are just birthing rooms that are completely different to the hospital rooms. The hospital room is just a very sterile bed with no bath, just a regular hospital room. Did that answer your question?
Yes, it did. It's cool to hear the different routes you can take and under what regulations and how hospitals, you know, when you went to your very first appointment, you got to check the box of home birth.
Yeah.
You know, that was an option for you under the auspices of a hospital. That's very interesting to me.
That's very cool.
Yeah. We're very lucky.
Hey, everyone. It's summertime and mommin' ain't always easy, especially when you're running on little sleep. But our friends at Reverie are dedicated to providing moms and pregnant women like you with top-notch sleep with their power bed. Now, Reverie sent us our very own power bed to try out, and this thing is awesome. You can go to our Facebook page and check out some of the videos of how we assembled it and just hanging out in it with baby Maya. I wish we had this thing sooner, like when I was pregnant, because it allows you to customize your sleep position for back support, swollen feet, and any other general discomfort. It's great in postpartum life too for healing and recovery, as well as nursing. Now, the PowerBed has won the Women's Choice Award for 6 years straight, and 98% of women who purchase would recommend it to a friend or family member. And it's way more affordable than you would think. So go to momsneedsleep.com/home to learn more. Once again, that's momsneedsleep.com/home to learn more.
So obviously I was in the pool, and she checked me at 11 and a half centimeters, and then she said it was about two. She said, I think I want to check you again because Will was trying to feed me some toast and I think I threw it across the room during one contraction. So she said, let's check you, see how you're going. And she said, you're 10 centimeters, so you can start pushing.
Wow, cool.
But she said, baby's head was up a bit. So she wanted me to get, she said, I'll get you out of the pool for a little while. I want to get you on the birth stool in the shower and you can just bring baby down and then hop back in the pool.
Right.
And I didn't feel like I wanted to push yet. And with all the hypnobirthing stuff, they don't ever talk about pushing. And I hadn't planned to push, and I hadn't planned to be coached into pushing either. But I was on this birth stool, and she was telling me to push. And I pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed. And those birth stools are so uncomfortable. Just the worst thing ever. But she said it's the right spot to be to get baby down. And then she said things aren't. I'd probably been pushing for an hour, and she said, can I just get you up on the bed? At this point, there was another midwife there. She said, I want to get you up on the bed, and I want to, for both the midwives, just be sitting on the bed and your feet up against us, just to see what's going on, see if you can get a little bit more leverage, I guess. And I pushed and pushed and pushed, and I was so tired. I was so exhausted because it had been going on for so long, and nothing was happening, and I still didn't feel like I needed to push. And I think at that point, I was starting to give up because it had been too long. And the midwife said, I think we need to get a doctor to come and have a chat to you about some interventions. And I felt like I'd lost the plot. I was so disappointed that I hadn't been able to do it myself. Mm. And I said, no, I don't want doctors. And at this point I started to cry. And she said, the doctors might need to do an instrumental delivery because baby's just not coming down, and I just, it was everything that I didn't want.
Yeah.
Anyway, the doctor came in and she said, what if we do an epidural because you're really exhausted? We know that baby's small. This has been going on a really long time. If you have an epidural, you'll be able to have a little sleep and then push baby out on your own, because the last thing I wanted was a cesarean.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because everything was happening so fast, in Anna May's book, she talks about moving to a hospital, moving somewhere else that you're not comfortable with, and things will slow down because of that. And I think that is probably what happened with those doctors being involved. And I said, okay, let's do the epidural, because I wanted to do it on my own, like push Audrey out. So because we were going to have the epidural, we had to move rooms. They couldn't do it in that room. So we had to walk down the corridor, and the midwife said, I'll put you in a wheelchair. And I didn't want the wheelchair. So I walked down, and I remember seeing some midwives and nurses at the nurse's station. And I was there through a contraction. I had to stop, and there was blood dripping on the floor, and such a mess. But anyway, I got to the room and I felt like all of a sudden I needed that epidural right then and then. And I think it was because everything was happening and everything was changing, and I wasn't comfortable anymore.
Yeah.
But we still had the midwife follow us. The same midwife. So Anise just came, had the epidural, And the doctor came in and said, I'll just check you first. And she checked me and I was only 9.5 centimetres. So I'd been pushing for an hour and a half at 9.5 centimetres.
Oh, wow.
So no wonder nothing was happening. So yeah. I think that I was pretty annoyed then that I had worked so hard for such a long time when nothing was ever going to happen anyway, because I wasn't fully dilated.
Right. And you didn't feel like pushing either, you said.
No, that's right, because people talk about this feeling of needing to do a poo, and I didn't have any of
that
because I wasn't fully dilated. Anyway, the doctor said, have the epidural and we'll just give you a couple of hours. You can have a rest, get your strength back, and then we'll be able to push baby out. So I feel like we dozed a bit. I remember seeing Will sitting in the chair and we sort of slept, but I don't really remember then. But it was probably 4 p.m. that I'd had the epidural, and I'd been 2 o'clock that I'd started pushing, and it was probably 6 or so, and they said, okay, you're 10 centimetres. I want to give you another hour for baby head to come down further. So we had another hour, and it was maybe 7:30 or 8 o'clock, and I started pushing again. And the thing about the epidural, you can feel the pressure of the contraction, and you can feel the tightening in your tummy, but you can't feel the contraction. It's exactly what I didn't want and what they talk about in the business of being born. You can't feel where to push, and you don't have an effective push because of the epidural. Anyway, so pushed and pushed and pushed and still nothing happened, and it was 9 o'clock and the doctor came in and said, look, I think that we need to do an instrumental. I think we need to do forceps. And I was like, no, because I see so many babies with injuries because of the forceps, and
yeah.
I know how much it damages the mum. Mm. I thought, no, don't want any of that. And the midwife was so supportive. She just was amazing. She so encouraging. She said to the doctor, no, we're just going to give it a little bit longer. We're going to do this on our own.
That's really great.
She was supportive like that. And at this point, what's that?
I said it was so great that she was supportive like that. Like she was on your team and just rooting for that.
Yeah, she was. She really was. Mm. Which is so great that you can have the midwife advocate for you when you have to have the doctors involved.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I value the opinion of the midwife more so than I do of the doctor in birth, where birth is concerned anyway. Mm. Anyway, so the doctor said, I'll give you till 9:30. To keep pushing on your own and see if you can get baby out. And I pushed and pushed and pushed and just nothing was happening. And she came in and she said, look, I can get this baby out in 10 minutes if we do it now. And I was like, okay, let's do that. Because at work, you hear it all the time, these failed failures progress and end up going to section. And I'm actually surprised that we didn't go to section because it's been so long. So since 2 p.m. and she wasn't born until 10 o'clock that night. But I was really scared of the forceps, and I don't know why, because I think I'd forgotten that I had an epidural and I wasn't going to feel anything anyway. But I said to the doctor, and at this point we had an anaesthetist in the room, we had the obstetrician, we had another doctor, we had the midwife, we had a paediatrician, we had a neonatal nurse.
Wow.
So a million people, it felt like.
Wow.
Which would have been completely different to how it was going to be at home and even in the birth centre. But I said to the – I felt like they – because they knew where I worked, so they knew that I knew what was going on, and they really respected how I felt and my views and my opinions. And I said to the doctor, look, I wanted to have a Vontus extraction instead of the forceps. The Vontus is the suction cap.
Mm. Okay.
So she didn't really like that idea. She said, no, I'd rather do the forceps. I said, well, I'd rather you do the Vontus. She said, okay, so we tried that and that didn't work. She said she'll give it a go, and if not, we'll do the forceps. So we went to forceps, and she wanted to do an episiotomy. I said, no, I don't want an episiotomy. And she said, okay. And then I said, we don't know the sex of the baby, so please don't tell us. She said, all right. And I said, if I want baby straight in my chest, she said, as long as everything's right, she'll go straight to your chest. So next thing, her head came out, and it was all purple, and then her body came out, and it was like she just flew to me. Straight in my chest, and she was so slimy and slippery, and it was like everybody in the room disappeared. It was just gas, and I feel like I could just cry thinking about it. It just was the most beautiful moment of my entire life. And this sounds so silly, but I think that if I just think back to that moment, if anything's going wrong in my life, I think back to that, everything will be okay. I wish that I could have that feeling a million times over. I'd have another baby again tomorrow just to have that. So I think, and she was on my chest for probably 15 minutes, and then they said they wanted to just take her over to the little trolley and do the cut the cord and all of that sort of stuff. So we did that and brought her back, and she, within half an hour of her being born, she was breastfeeding, and she just is the best breastfeeder. She's amazing. I hardly have to do anything to help her out. And I've got lots of milk, I think, because I started expressing before. It had already had a whole heap of colostrum. And because she was so little, so she was only 5 pounds 13, they had to do, which was right on the borderline of transferring from home anyway. So if we'd been at home not knowing that she was small, we would have had to go to the hospital to check her sugars, like her blood sugar level. Which is, you know, in hindsight, I wouldn't have liked having to just have this baby in this beautiful moment and then quick, let's get in the ambulance and go to the hospital. So I was glad that we were at the hospital, and her sugars were fine. They were really good, but we still gave her a little bit of colostrum from the syringe just to top her up a little bit. But she was perfect, and everything was so beautiful. And I, when I spoke to my hypnobirthing, the lady who did the hypnobirthing classes with, she's a friend of mine, and she's a neonatal nurse and a midwife. And she spoke to me after. She said, "Did the hypnobirthing give you unrealistic expectations of what it was like?" And I said, it didn't at all, because, yeah, it was a lot harder than I thought it was going to be. I think I went into it thinking it was going to be so easy and it was going to be pain-free, and it wasn't. But I went into it, and the birth, not being scared at all, I was really excited about it. And you hear so many mums, they're so fearful of the delivery and the pain. And I hadn't even thought about it at all. And the hypnobirthing, like, I'd watched lots of videos of home births or just hypnobirthing videos of the mums. You know, their faces were completely calm and there was no screaming and everything was beautiful. And it wasn't really like that for me. But it was so nice going into it not being scared. And I felt calm all the way through the pregnancy about that. So I'm really glad that we did that. And I had, you know, at home we had all the positive other birth affirmations hanging about the place. I'd made some little cards to put up all over in our bedroom and in the toilet and in the lounge room. And we brought some of those to the hospital. So, yeah, I feel like we had a really positive birth experience, even though we weren't at home. And even though I had to have an epidural and we had to have forceps and I had a tear and we had stitches, it's still, none of that mattered because we had a perfect baby.
Like you said, in that moment when Audrey came out, everybody else in the room just melted away and it was just the three of you.
Yeah, they did.
What I love... I love about your story is it really depicts home birth as a mindset and as a will and as a lifestyle, going into this experience with that decision in mind, that plan, but yet rolling with the things, the circumstances that can shift, you know, what we intentionally initially envision. And you, despite the environment you come from and your work, like you said, you're surrounded by a lot of fear and a lot of potential negative energy that you could have worn on, but moving forward powerfully with your plan. And then, like you said, so long without sleep, not in your comfort zone, your environment that you're going to be used to, just really harnessing that patience and that trust. And I think it speaks worlds about you and who you are for yourself and your trust of yourself and your intuition, you and Will and your connection. Like you just listed suction, forceps, epidural, tearing, all of those things. And yet you just said that you had a very positive birth experience. That's awesome.
That's so cool.
Yeah, we did. And I think because I was so disappointed that we had to have those the interventions, but looking back, like, I didn't quite make it to 10 centimetres. I made it to pushing. Or, like, we had no pain relief. We were just the three of us. All on our own. And I'm really proud of myself that I did that. And, you know, it doesn't matter that we ended up with an epidural. It, you know, it doesn't mean that I couldn't do it. Or, you know, it just how it happened.
Yeah, you got a beautiful, healthy baby. And Will, are you still there? I didn't know if you had stepped away.
Yes.
Just come back.
Perfect timing, because I got a question for you. So,
someone's at the door. He's just gone down.
Well, I'm going to hold that question then, because what I want to hear from Will has to do with the learning that home birth was going to be taken off the table, because that's, you know, that kind of, especially how deep into your pregnancy you guys got for you all to be able to just shift. And, you know, like you said, it was disappointing, but you just shifted and then kept it moving. That to me is pretty inspiring. And I know a lot of the families, moms and families out there listening can learn a lot from your example and how you guys just experienced that and flowed with it.
I think as well, like, because on that, when we went in to see the doctor before she was either going to tell us that home birth was on or it was off, I think Liv said, I'll be so disappointed. Like, what if we can't have it at home? But once we'd had the news and gone through it with the doctor, Liv was fine with it. She said, I'm surprised how good I feel about this. It's not something you control your feelings. You can't control how you feel. But if you know that there's another option that's going to work out fine as well, it's not... you're not going to be disappointed by it, sort of thing.
And I think we knew, because we were never going to do anything that was unsafe.
Yeah.
And being at home, the midwife had said, if anything at all slightly goes wrong, we'll be transferring to the hospital. And I think I had to sign something to say that I was okay with that. If things were going wrong and the midwife said, we have to go, then I would have to say, all right, that's all right. Because, you know, we wanted to do everything, you know, make sure that I was safe and that baby was safe. How it happened, I think.
Or worked out how it was supposed to.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so, Will, what were you thinking as, you know, you guys went to the birthing center and just time kept ticking on and the doctors were coming in and saying, well, we think you should do this. And, you know, you guys are saying, no, we're going to continue with this. Like, what kind of things were going through your mind through that entire period?
I think... it was all just happening as it was supposed to, as far as I was concerned. Like, I know that, some labors can be over and done with in an hour or two, others can take all day, sort of thing. So I wasn't thinking, we should be up to this point or this should be happening now.
But you could see how it was right.
Once they suggested the epidural, I'd sort of probably for half an hour I'd been thinking, Liv's done. She's not going to be able to do it like this. I was probably accepting that advice was the way to go.
Yeah.
And I think as well, when she was pushing at the very end before the doctor came in with the forceps, basically, even with the midwife sort of encouragement and coaching, I was sort of, look, it's just not happening, sort of thing. I hope that kind of that attitude didn't sort of Liv didn't pick up on that or anything. Even with that, it was if that's the way it has to work out and that's how it works out. The doctor, she was all sort of hustle and bustle, but she knew exactly what she was doing, and I was confident in her.
I think also I knew that lots of doctors try to scare mum when they're at a point in their labour and they say failure to progress, we need to go to section. I knew that I wasn't going to be scared into that because I knew that things were okay. And I said that to her. I said, no, I feel okay, because she said, you know, baby's hard, she's little, blah, blah, blah. I said, no, I think that I just want to keep going, keep doing what we're doing for a bit longer. We just have to get the dummy. We've just dropped it on the floor.
Yeah.
We're talking about you, Audrey.
I think that's our birth story.
Yeah. Well, last question for Will. Will, what was the moment like for you when Audrey came out?
He just stepped away. He's just got Audrey.
He's a dad, right? I forget that.
He is a dad. He's a very good dad.
He's doing what you have to do on lots of interviews.
I know.
What it felt like for you when she came out with.
Oh, it was unbelievable. It's sort of, don't know if you can describe it, but just the moment when, yeah, she's on Liv's chest and the three of us are there. There was, I don't know, 10 people in the room, all the medical staff and that, and running around, but I, like, didn't even realise they were there, sort of thing. It was just the three of us. So, yeah, it's an amazing feeling for sure.
That's awesome. Sarah and I have been, we have your, Olivia, your Instagram account open. And so we've been sort of glancing.
Oh, with all of my photos.
Yeah, just the account. You know, the same thing happened to Sarah's. Yeah. Maya took it over. But
yeah.
You guys are a beautiful family.
Oh, thank you.
Guys, I'm just curious to wrap up this amazing conversation. What's some advice that you'd like to leave with other families who, like you, might set out with a certain plan and it just gets shifted in a very real way? What advice do you have?
Well, I think try not to be too disappointed if things don't go to plan, because often it's best, well, you can't plan everything for a birth because things don't go the way that you always want them to, because it's a natural process. And I'm just so, so glad that I felt okay with it, because I really did not want to be, you know, postpartum-wise, years down the track, just really disappointed with how things went, because I knew that that wasn't going to be, you know, I just didn't want that to happen. So if you just go into any sort of birth that you're going to have, if you go into it with an open mind and you can't plan for things, just go with the flow. And yeah, that's all that you can do. But I read this one book, because I read Ina May, but I read a book called Unhindered Childbirth by Sarah Morgan Haydock, and it was about free birthing, and not that I would ever do that, but it was so good to read how it can be so natural and so normal, and you really can do it. And it was such a beautiful book, especially because I see so much negative stuff at work. It was really nice to read. But things are so natural, and it's what you're supposed to do.
That's great.
What's the name of that? What's the title of that book again?
It's called Unhindered Childbirth.
Unhindered Childbirth. Okay, cool. We'll put a link for everyone listening. We're going to put a link to that book in the show notes for this episode, which you'll be able to find at diahpodcast.com.
Yes.
There's another documentary that nobody has mentioned yet, and it's American, so I'm sure you would have heard it. It's called Why Not Home. Have you heard about it?
I have, and I'm looking to get in touch with someone from that documentary.
Wink, wink.
So if anyone is listening who has a connection to the creators.
I watched that when I was about 35 weeks pregnant, and it was an amazing movie because it interviews doctors and nurses and midwives, all who have chosen to have babies at home.
Right, and I can see why that's so applicable to you.
Yeah, well, that's right. It's you've made an informed decision, especially because you know all of the things that go wrong, and you still decided to have a baby at home. So, get hold of that documentary if you can. It's very good.
Great.
Oh, that's awesome.
That
Thanks
will
for
be
that
linked in the show as well.
Yes, it will.
Yeah.
Olivia, Will, if you're there with Audrey out there doing daddy work, thank you so much for hanging out with us. We really appreciate you. I'm so grateful that we were able to connect, Olivia, and you allowed us to share your story. And if you are listening, go to our website, diahpodcast.com, and look at the show notes for this episode, because we are going to include pictures of this gorgeous child that you need to look at. And it's just, you guys are just such a cute family.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for having us. I'm so glad to be on your show, because I've listened to you since you released the show, I think. I started listening to you before Maya was born, or before you did her birth episode. Yeah.
Well, we're honored.
We
thank
are.
You.
We really are. Yeah, thank you guys.
Does your father know you're listening to this podcast? Well, when you're done, why don't you stop by and check out a show that is 100% dad approved, Dadages. Hi there, I'm Chad Higley. If you're looking for useful insights and practical advice you can actually apply to work, family, education, philanthropy, and just life in general, check out Dadages. That's Dadages, wherever you listen to your podcasts.